So if you could be here around 9, that would be great. Okay?
Well, listen here.
Hello, I'm Miss H, and today Mr. O and I will be discussing the season 5 finale of Life After Lockup. On this episode, Chance apologizes to Taylor, Derek proposes to Monique, Sarah gets a boob job, Brittany and Marcelino renew vows, then separate, Eris and Cameron tell the rest of the family she's pregnant, Michael reproposes to Justine, Blaine and Lindsay make up, and Amber and TC argue over who gets the truck. If you like what you hear, please give us a rating, and if you watch 90 Day Fiancé, check out our other podcast channel, 90 Day MK, Teachable Moments with Miss H and Mr. O. Thanks and enjoy.
Hello, Miss H.
Hello, Mr. O.
How are things going with you?
They're going okay on a Sunday. It's kind of a lazy Sunday.
Yeah, I mean, it's so rainy here. There's like nothing else to do.
Oh, so. It's sprinkly here too. So
yeah,
who knows what California is doing weather-wise.
All right, so let's jump because we had an extra long episode this week.
Yes, because it's our season finale, which I swear we didn't get any warning, right?
I didn't get any warning. I guess when I hit play, it was like, here's the season finale of Love After Lockup. I was like, okay.
All right. So surprise, season finale. We're covering it right now.
Yes, right. And so let's start with the reason we didn't think it was going to be the season finale, and that's Brittany and Marcelino, because we thought it would take them a few weeks to figure out this wedding.
Yeah.
All right. So we've already jumped straight into this wedding, and Brittany's mom, Cindy, surprises her by showing up at the door. So Marcelino arranged the whole thing, and then he goes with Gio to set up things at the beach. So while she's getting her hair done, Brittany talks to her mom about how everything is going. So she says it's been up and down, but she's hopeful that Marcelino is honest about trying to change this time. So we switch to Marcelino, who meets his brother Andrew to set up the wedding spot. So they start to put together what they call his vision. So that's pretty much putting a runner down on the sand and setting up a table with flowers on it, I guess. So Andrew doesn't seem too confident that it's good enough. And we jump back to Brittany and her mom is asking her if she's considering not going through with today, you know, not marrying the guy you're already married to is on the table, I suppose. But she does. It was a lot of worry because Brittany shows up like over an hour late, you know, as always, these kind of things go. But it's a cute little ceremony led by Cindy. And she has one of their children that's like growling the whole time right in front of her. So maybe that wasn't cute, but they read their own vows. And Brittany is very impressed with Marcelino's, even if he did, you know, write them. I don't know. It was weird because they kind of showed us over his shoulder and they were like really big writing on his notepad, like very large letters. So Brittany starts hers. You know, there's parasailers in the background. It wasn't like a private beach or something they let off. It's like there's always people walking through the background of these pictures. And she barely holds it together through her vows. And they kiss before Cindy even gets to say, "You may now kiss your bride." Afterward, Marcelino shakes and sprays the champagne everywhere. And Brittany talks about how far they've come. But not so far that he doesn't like pick her up and drop her in the sand when she jumps up for a hug. She just dropped her. They like fell on top of each other or something. But then we ominously skip to 2 months later. So we see Brittany bringing the kids to like a lakefront and tells us that the last few months have been confusing and difficult because she found out that Marcelino was still talking to people behind her back. So she says she feels disgusted and that he hasn't changed and now he's blown his one chance. So we flip to Marcelino, who says that he's regretful for the things he's done and he's been living selfishly for way too long. But he can't dwell on things that he can't change and has to move on now. So she's now going to focus on herself and her children, but still breaks down crying in an interview and cuts it short, saying she just can't do this anymore. So that at the end, they tell us that they are separated now and will still co-parent in Florida. All right. So when she said she's done, do we think that means she's done for good? We won't see him on the show anymore? Or like what?
I think it means they're done until the next season comes around, right? Because we thought this was a whole sham to begin with. We were just like, all right, this couple is a couple that's desperate for the money, and they are willing to kind of play up because, I mean, they're the couple that, you know, we definitely were rooting for at the beginning, but they became the couple that we saw so often that it's like, what more storylines do you have, you know?
Right.
And I really believe that when they broke up in Vegas, like that was it. if this hadn't come around, right? Mm-hmm. And now it's like, okay, well, let's pretend we're back together again for the cameras for another season, because I do find it very convenient that they got back together and broke up before and after the season.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, yeah, yeah. We didn't see either of those things happen right. in season. Right.
Yeah.
It's just like, so it was like, okay, well, we'll do this one more time. We'll come together. We'll pretend we're together again. And then whatever, we'll break up at the end afterwards. So we'll just get one more out of it. But the question is, if they're going to get one more or are they done?
I don't think so. I don't think they're going to get another one. There's no way, because it would just be the same exact thing played out. Because, and I think this is what's frustrating about them being on the show again, is like, mm-hmm. there was zero progress towards anything. If you were to summarize what happened this entire season, like actually on camera, nothing. Okay, what drama happened? There was nothing. Like everything that happened was all off camera. They moved to Florida off camera. You know, they had conversations with various family members, strangers, friends about mm-hmm. their relationship. You know, they renewed vows, which literally lasted like 5 minutes of planning and actual seeing the thing. And then all the interesting stuff happened off camera.
Yeah. I mean, we didn't get any suspicion. I just felt like we just got Brittany making the same like monologue to the camera over and over and over again. And that's why I didn't summarize a lot of what she said, because it was like, we've literally heard her say this 1,000 times already.
Oh, right. Yeah. And we hear Marcelino saying the same thing, too. The only thing that to me gives it some amount of legitimacy is if I were Marcelino and I were trying to stay on this show for money, you know, would I want to come off as a total asshole that is like uncaring towards Brittany's feelings, basically a cheater? You know, would I want to come off that way? I don't think the money is worth that. Uh-huh. Like your dignity or, you know, your reputation. That is the only thing that kind of to me gives it some amount of legitimacy, is I wouldn't want to be on the show so badly to make everyone question my values.
Right. Well, especially, I don't know, if, you know, I mean, you're separated and you're going to have to find somebody else. It's just like, oh, yeah. Like, this
guy. You're a cheater. Okay. Yeah, you.
Yeah. It's, I mean, he didn't really fight. Like, at the end, we heard him the accusations, it wasn't like, she doesn't mm-hmm. understand. But he was like, yeah.
I did it. I regret it.
I regret doing some things.
I'm selfish. It's like, oh, great.
Yeah. And so we didn't even get that, like, so that at the end of the day is what we didn't have. We didn't have any conflict, right?
Right.
We had, I will try. Well, I tried and failed. Oh, well. Like everybody knew what the stakes were, and we didn't. And you're right. We didn't even see it.
Yeah. And I kind of feel like, you know, that if it really was fake, it was because Marcelino's like, I'm not going to act like a total asshole and have this televised. You know?
For sure. Yeah.
I'm not going to fake my way through having these make me look so terrible.
We have other people who definitely will be like, all right, I'll do whatever on camera to make myself look terrible. Yeah. For sure.
Okay. So let's move on to another couple that we really barely saw this long episode. We first start off with them on a commercial segment of Justine modeling clothes for Michael, highlighting her baby bump. And Michael's all about it. Michael and Justine are getting ready for his show, and Michael is getting worried because he hasn't been on stage for 6 years and he didn't have time to rehearse. And it also ends up that he's planning on proposing on stage. Justine is trying to pep talk Michael, saying she'll cheer him on no matter what. And if it's bad, they'll just have a good laugh about it on the way home. Justine isn't used to seeing Michael not be confident. At the venue, Mocha introduces Michael to the stage and mentions Justine as his wife, but then takes a jab saying that Justine doesn't like him. Justine thinks that Mocha is a good friend, but judging by the side of the crowd, he's a subpar manager at best. She thinks he needs to focus on, you know, his job rather than Michael's wedding ring. Michael performs as Justine dances along. He asks a pregnant Justine to get on stage, and he gets down on one knee and presents the upgraded ring to her. Justine is caught off guard, but she loves it. Meanwhile, Mocha thinks that Michael is defiant and stubborn, considering Michael did this on what Mocha considers his stage against his wishes. Michael, in the update, has released some music and a music video, and it says that their baby is due in July. All right, so I think this was an interesting choice for him to propose, since Mocha does seem very against it. So do it in a situation where Mocha is there and his fans are there, definitely going against. Do you think was defiance on Michael's part or just lack of consideration on his part?
Probably a little bit of defiance. I don't think he didn't consider it, right? But I think this also kind of puts it in like, okay, this is done. You stop talking about it. You can see that I've clearly made my decision about how I'm going to handle this moving forward, right?
Yeah.
So that – not much like I'm not listening to what you say, you jerk. You can't tell me – nobody can tell me what to do kind of defiance. But like, yeah, I understand what your opinions are and they're null and void now. I've made my own decision, kind of a way to close this topic of discussion for the future.
Sure. I could kind of see it like that too, because, but I also think like maybe less so in a defiance, but still kind of like it is defiant. But I think he was trying to make a grand gesture to Justine, you know,
yes,
and to make
sure.
a grand gesture to Justine really is defiance, because Justine and Mocha have opposing views on this. And that's the reason why Mocha even pointed out Justine doesn't like him, you know, up on stage.
Yeah. I mean, it's less defiant because at least, even Mocha on stage admitted like this is his wife, which this is something that like one of my daughters was like kind of walking through the room when all this was happening. And I was like, I just need to point out that these two people are already married.
Yes. Right. Like it was so unnecessary. That whole proposal, super unnecessary.
Yeah. But I mean, I think it was definitely a way for him to both show Mocha and probably more importantly, Justine, like where he's going to land on the pretending I'm not married part of this rap career, right?
Yeah.
Which, I mean, I don't know. I don't know about Mocha as – because, you know, Justine was like, look at the size of his crowd that Mocha brought. And I was like, in my head, I'm like, I'm pretty sure production brought most of his crowd. I don't even think Mocha did it. I think the show did it. And it's still a really small crowd.
Right. Well, we need a little bit more background on it. It's like, is this Vegas in the middle of the week? Is it like how far off the strip is this venue?
I was definitely off the strip because they were driving. Like,
yeah. So it's kind of like all those things. Yeah. Could explain the small crowd because like, they're throwing him in there like on a Tuesday night. It's like, yeah, well.
If it's a Tuesday night, I could see this being like, oh, it's like Tuesday at 4 p.m. Like,
yeah, you're going on. Yeah, because in Vegas indoors, you never know what time it is.
Yeah, exactly. That's the design. So who knows when this was. They could have been there for – and they could have also been there for hours and hours and hours before anybody had been on stage. Like they basically rented out the bar. Just to bring people in and be like, you person on the street, you want to be on TV? Hey, we have a show.
Yeah,
like that's more or less what I imagine the crowd was.
Yeah.
But I don't know. It's just weird that you're like looking at this career and you're like, this career is not going to happen.
Yeah. But at the same time, I'm really not worried about them as a couple. They seem like a pretty solid couple. Like,
yeah,
they'll
that's
be fine.
Definitely true. Yeah, they probably will.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right, so moving along, let's go to Sarah and Sean. So we're going to move on to storyline B for this episode because we've already for this season because we've already finished the Anthony stuff, and that's Sarah's boob job. So apparently the surgery is today. This whole last episode is just like, oh yeah, that thing we've been leading up. Yeah, now it's now go. And Sean thinks that she's rushing things because it wasn't supposed to be today. She got moved up because of cancellation. So Sean still isn't a fan of everything changing. Especially now that Anthony's in the picture. The implication, of course, is that she's only getting the boob job to impress Anthony. But she says it's totally just for her. So another issue that he's having is they have to drop the baby off at her mom's house. I don't know why they had to drop the baby off at her mom's house. I guess because Sean was picking up and dropping off. But
Sean can't multitask.
I know. That seems weird. I was like, can't he just watch the kid? I don't know.
That's what I'm saying. Sean can't multitask.
But anyway, the point was he doesn't want to have to talk to mom because him and Kathy never got along. And now that he's been always trying to impress her. And now that Kathy has lied to him about, Anthony being around, he just is like, nope, I'm done with this lady. I don't want to look at her. I don't want to talk to her. So So it's all just, I don't know. So on the drive, Sean says he's just going to wait outside when they get there. And he follows up on that. You know, and then Sarah goes in and says, well, Sean's in the car being a pouty pants. Not even inside. Like, Kathy comes outside. So it's all, everything's weird because he doesn't even wait in the car. He like gets out and sits on the hood, like notably not looking at them, like looking off into space for nothing. So anyway, Sarah's mom talk about how, you know, when Sarah's recovering, it's going to be all up to Sean to have to take care of everything. That's going to be a rude awakening for him. So she also kind of loudly shouts some insults across the yard. And then by this point, he gets back in the car and starts yelling from the driver's seat at her. Yeah. About like, well, you lied to me. You didn't say the things that you knew. Yeah. So it's just awkward for everything. The next thing we see of them, though, is Sean picking Sarah up after the surgery and like a dumbass, like guiding her by putting his arm around onto her boob. Like,
yeah.
She's dumb. Like, can you put that down a little lower? So she takes some painkillers that the doctor prescribed in the car. And Sean's also not a fan of that because he's just like, you're going to get addicted to the painkillers. So he's still not enthusiastic about the whole situation. And she's just waiting for the swelling to go down so she can actually see her new boobs. So on the way home, they stop at Kathy's to pick up the baby. But Abby is staying there because I think – is Kathy still Abby's legal guardian?
Yes. So okay. Abby lives with Kathy.
Yeah. So Sean has plenty of uncertainties in this relationship and, you know – now, but it's now, especially now that he's like stuck giving the kid, the baby, a bath, which Sarah gives his kid a bath every night, which I had babies. That's kind of excessive. So Sarah thinks that if she was still with Anthony, her life would be garbage. So there's no way she would ever leave for Anthony. And then kind of sings the praises about how much she loves Sean, but she's not sure if things were confident, but going for this point, but is confident in the decision she's made so far. So in the kind of postscript, just talk about the boobs, says she loves her new boobs. And then they make Sean like look at them and be like, oh, I think they look good too. So there's that. I don't know. Okay. What could he have done that wouldn't be – it would have been – I mean, there's lots of options. That would have been less awkward than yelling at your mother-in-law from the driver's seat of a car through passenger window. It was weird.
He is petty as fuck. Like, yep. We've seen it this entire season. It's like, how are you so petty? You know? And it's like, at the end of the day, this is a woman who is taking care of your daughter. Mm-hmm. So you have to get over whatever it is. She's helping you out. You cannot treat her like that. You know? And like, yeah, I get that you're upset about whatever it is, but like, acting like pouty pants, as Sarah put it, is not an option. You can talk to her about like why you're upset and try to resolve things, but being pouty pants and treating her like shit when she continues to take care of, you know, his daughter is not the answer.
Yeah, no, it does not take that much to be like, oh, hi, how you doing? Okay. Yeah. All right. Well, we'll see you later. Like that's right. Literally all that was required of him was to stand there and say, hi, how you doing? We'll see you later.
Yeah. Like, but what is he gaining by physically protesting, right?
Nothing. Because he just looks like a child.
It makes him look like a child. But he did the exact same thing with Anthony.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
Like refusing to shake his hand, walking off. It's like this guy is petty and immature. And as a partner, like I would be embarrassed that was my partner behaving that way in different scenarios. I would never want to claim, well, I mean, for other reasons too. I would never want to claim that Sean was my partner. I'd be like, this is an idiot.
Yeah. I would never be like, what's your partner doing? Oh, he's pouting in the car because he doesn't want to talk to you.
Yeah. Like, he's still mad at you. It's like,
yeah. That, I mean, that's, right. That's like, you're right, petty. That's what you hear from like teenage mean girls shit. That
yeah.
Like, he's mad at you. So he told me to tell you that blah, 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 blah. Like,
right.
This is stupid.
It is the most ridiculous thing. And it's like, it's somewhat comical to me when we see him. And he is definitely starting to look over his age at mm-hmm. this point, right? It's having a child, I'm sure. The sleep deprivation, all that. Like, having a small baby at home, that's going to age anyone. But he was already kind of older to begin with. And you got that on one end, how he physically looks very old, but he's behaving like a 10-year-old.
Yes. Yeah, I and as bad as he always was, I kind of feel like his behavior has been like regressing to more childishness.
Yeah.
I just can't get over it. I literally can't remember ever being so angry about to anybody that I was like, well, I don't want to see him. If I was that mad that I didn't even want to see him, then I would also not ask them to watch my child.
Right.
Like that's so weird to be like, well, you can watch my kid, but I don't want to talk to her. Like, that's just so dumb. It's so dumb.
Stupidity. Absolutely. All right. Speaking of stupidity, let's talk about Lindsay and Blaine. Ugh. So we open on a frustrated and angry Blaine who's smashing and burning things in the front yard like an old toilet. He says he's provided for Lindsay everything down to the vape pen in her mouth and has never asked for anything in return. He doesn't like how she spoke to him during their argument and how she left so quickly and how she just threw things in his face. Lindsay calls him saying she wants to talk and Blaine agrees. On his way back to the house, he gets a call from his lawyer, Tyler, who tells him that he might be able to get his ankle monitor off and he's working on it, but he'll need a payment of $3,000 to do the legal work. Blaine tells Tyler that money is tight right now, but he sees this as a blessing and says he'll figure it out. He can't wait to bring this news to Lindsay, but he also plans on keeping it in his back pocket for when the conversation goes sideways. Lindsay asks him to start talking when he walks in the house, and he just kind of says, you know, I was on my way over here. And Lindsay's quick to jump on him and accuse him of not thinking he did anything wrong by not starting off with an apology. Blaine says he's tired of her belittling him, and what was the point of her asking him there to talk so soon? Lindsay says that he doesn't want to deal with the issues. Blaine just asks where the animals are, and Lindsay says they're at her mom's. They then argue about who contributes what, and Lindsay accuses Blaine of spending money on things that only benefit him, like paying his restitution in full. Blaine says that he paid all his legal stuff, including $20,000, and that's hurt him financially, but he does think it was a good decision. Blaine thinks that this is the perfect time to give Lindsay the good news of what his lawyer brought, being able to get his ankle monitor off, and throws in that it's because he paid his fines and restitution in full. As soon as Blaine mentions the $3,000 in legal fees, Lindsay laughs and walks out of the room. Blaine suggests that maybe he give her all his money now and he'll just go back to prison. He then rattles off a list of things he's done for her, like pick her up from prison, let her stay at his place, get her a job, buy her food, and Lindsay is just speechless through this whole rant. Lindsay then asks how she's going to get $3,000. He then throws it in her face how easy it is for her to get money by using her looks to con men in prison, and that just makes Lindsay more mad as she leaves the room. Blaine says that everyone close to him has walked out on him, so it doesn't feel good when she does that and leaves. Lindsay says that she's trying in this relationship, but Blaine says that he's tired of this repetitive cycle. Lindsay admits that maybe she's not so good at relationships. Blaine is crying and Lindsay hugs him. Lindsay asks what he needs, and Blaine says that he needs support and not to kick him when he's down. Lindsay says that she's not trying to kick him, but rather get him to move and motivate himself. She says that she's not sure how much longer she can help with the household when things like $3,000 get added in and she needs him to help her financially. They both apologize and Blaine says he will do his best to step up and she needs to quit making irrational decisions. Blaine says that a ring is in their future, but maybe not in the same timeline as what Lindsay wants. Lindsay says she'll ask him if he takes too long. Blaine is still working to save the money to pay his lawyer to get his ankle monitor removed, and Lindsay is expecting a proposal by the end of the year, or she's going to propose to Blaine. Okay, so I think that it's pretty clear that they both love each other. The kinds of things they fight about are like very typical things that couples in general fight about.
Sure, yeah.
I mean, money problems, obviously stemming from different reasons than I would say is the typical reason.
Yeah, but when money is tight, there's always money, fights over money, for sure.
Mm-hmm. Sure. So this is and it's clear that they want to work things out. But why do you think Blaine is so hesitant to propose to Lindsay then?
I think he's always kind of sitting here waiting for the other shoe to drop. And he doesn't want to mm-hmm. be committed to her when it does. Like, because she's going to do that. Like, that's the way she is. She blows mm-hmm. up and it's like, well, everything's done. You might as well get out of here. And like, okay, so how many times is she going to do that? When is she going to do that and finally mean it? And if she is going to do that, I don't want to be actually legally married to her when she decides that it's all done. And now we have to go through a whole divorce process instead of just, you know, going the separate ways like she wants to.
Yeah.
And so I do think that is a hesitation. Like, how long is she going to put up with my shit? Like it's actually see if she will for a good stretch before I commit to the wedding.
Yeah, I kind of wonder too, and maybe you would have an idea about this being from the man's perspective of culturally, you're supposed to be the ones to propose. How much does like you being able to afford a ring that you think that they deserve or that you think that they would be happy with that contributes to the timeline of an actual proposal? Because if money's tight, I can see that as also being a like, well, what kind of ring am I going to be able to get in the next 6 months?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know that the ring that really varies depending on the woman, like, because
well, Lindsay
wants a
woman.
Ring, but I don't know that she, I don't know, but I think it has, I think there's more of a male pride thing going mm-hmm. with, I'm not going to ask somebody to marry me if I'm not. Like if I'm not capable of being financially independent, if I don't have a job mm-hmm. and I'm not living in my – if I couldn't afford my own house and I couldn't do that, I'm not going to say, well, because you're supposed to be the provider, right? And I could definitely see Blaine saying I'm supposed to be the provider. And if I can't even provide enough for myself, what business do I have getting in and marrying somebody else? Because I know the first time I got married mm-hmm. was definitely that. There was this still kind of, well, let's just do this. We both know we're going to do it, right? But I didn't have a mm-hmm. job yet. That's literally what the holdup was. And it wasn't about getting the ring because, you know, my ex didn't really care about any kind of ring or anything. But it for me, it was about like, but I don't have a job. I'm not going to put myself into this situation where we're like moving forward together in this institution if I can't even – if I still, you know, I'm not even doing things for myself, right? And mm-hmm. and so I definitely get – I think now that I'm saying it, that might have more to do with it than – anything else.
Hmm. Yeah, I can see that, especially since that's what they've been arguing about, mm-hmm. essentially, right?
Yeah.
Is his like, well, it is money, but I mean, money as a result of not having a job or, you know, being settled, at least stability wise, mm-hmm. like where you are in life.
Yeah. And I mean, I think it has a lot to do with, you know, there's definitely a cultural expectation thing. He wants to contribute to the family, to their relationship as a financial provider. And she's like, I don't care if that's not how you contribute. If you don't contribute that way, you need to step up and contribute in other ways. And he's just focused on like, well, let me figure out how I can contribute as a financial provider. When she's like, maybe sweep the floor. That would help. Right. And I think that's part of where their arguments are stemming from too, is like they both want him to contribute. But, you know, she's more open to different ways he can contribute and he's really stuck on contributing in one specific way.
Yeah, that's true. I would also put this couple as a couple that will probably make it at least for a while.
Yeah.
I mean, just as Sarah said in her segment, she can't really predict the future, right? But I think it's the same with Lindsay and Blaine. We can't really see where they're going to be like 10 years from now, but at least they're in it for the long haul.
Yeah. I always get confused at the end here when people are like having such a – I mean, I think this is a weird thing on me. I think it's pretty common for a lot of people having mm-hmm. such a big passionate argument where they're like at each other's throats and really going. And then all of a sudden it's like –
kissing and making up and trying to have makeup sex like 2 seconds later.
2 seconds later. Like I was like, okay, those things happen. But I need some time to cool off first. Like there's a transition between me being like, you know, really angry with you and then like really wanting to go do the other things. But Like, yeah, it's not that quick. It's not like I stop and immediately, but I think for a lot of, for Lindsay specifically, I feel like we've seen it before where it's just like those,
yeah,
those two emotions of being really angry and really turned on are really close to each other.
Yeah.
All right. So next up is, let's go Chance and Taylor. So we're still at the bar from last episode, and Chance is leaving with his friend that he called from the bathroom, and Taylor is crying and going home with Bobby. So she is still pretty shook up about the whole situation. Taylor really didn't like seeing Chance out and about with another woman. I think she said female. I don't like it when people say female, but also thinks that his drinking is getting out of control. Then we jump to the next day and to a hungover Chance. So his friend Zach, who was the person who picked him up, has to get going. So he's kicking Chance out, but not before telling him that he was a mess last night. So Chance says it's time to admit that he's an alcoholic, but Zach thinks that it's the lack of structure after getting out of prison that's the problem, right? He's the institutionalized problem. Mm-hmm. So they start talking numbers, and Chance tells us that he does 3 shots every morning and he can have 12 drinks before he even starts to feel a buzz. But that's where Zach throws water on that and is like, yeah, everybody else can tell you're drunk when you've had 12 drinks, even if you don't feel buzzed. So Chance says he needs to find a better way to deal with all this stress. And at this point, he's not even sure he's getting married. So Zach takes him back to his truck, which he like just peels off in, just floors it out of the parking lot.
My gosh,
and we get a monologue in the truck about how he hasn't heard from Taylor all day, which might be concerning. All day, because I thought he was hungover the next morning, but by the time he actually gets back to the house and parks outside, it's sunset, like it's almost dark. So he calls her from the driveway to apologize and also explain himself. So he seems to be remorseful, which is why Taylor allows him to come in and talk to her. So when he comes in, she throws some shade about how she's just been cuddling with their son all day, and he apologizes for how he treated her and blames stress, which she says is, you know, equally bad for her. They're my bills too. But yeah, we know that there's more stress than she knows about, and he finally does tell her that he got laid off. He says until next summer. So he also tells her that he wants to go to counseling, either AA or Cupper's counseling, a social skills class, whatever, all the things. So Taylor is willing to work with him because they have a family together and, you know, a child, but doesn't want to have to put up with any more of this crap. So she says her trust for Chance is broken now because of all the wasting money, all the gambling, all the drinking, and kind of says what we've been saying all season. Like, he's a negative drain on this household. Like, yes, it's 2 people, but I would be better off with just me. I would be spending less money and everything. So in the epilogue, we get a screenshot that tells us there's good news and bad news. The good news is that Chance managed to find some work. The bad news is that he's trying to do home improvement projects again.
Oh, God, I know. I was like, why? You're not good at this. You need to find another job.
They're still living together, but Taylor says their engagement is on hold. Yeah, so what? Okay, I kind of want to go to the home improvement project. What was he making? I've chosen to figure out what it was that he was doing.
It looked like props for like a play or something like that.
Yes.
Because they look like one-dimensional like wood
like
cutouts that
cutouts.
He was like weirdly screwing together, but it like wasn't reaching the roof of whatever it was. So I was like, I have no
idea.
There
was like a set of stairs next to him that was just like – he clearly got the risers for the stairs, you know, the cutouts for the stairs that you get. But then just like bolted 2x4s to them, it looked like. It was not good.
This man has no actual official training to do construction, right? Why do people keep on allowing him to do it?
I mean, well, I say allow. It was I thought he was doing home improvements in Taylor's house again.
Oh, God. Well, there you go. Also the other thing that kind of caught me was that he made it sound like to Taylor, like he didn't really even tell her the full truth. He said like, oh, I lost my job a couple days ago. Isn't it like, you know, wasn't it? It's not my imagination, right? He's lost his job for over a month.
I don't know the actual timetable. They were making us think it was over a month, but you know how these shows play with time. It feel like it was many episodes ago, but yeah.
Yes.
Because he had a chance to go and ask his friend and like do the things and was like, whoa, and another, you can't help me. And if I don't have it by the end of the month, I'm going to be life and death, blah, blah, blah. Right.
Yeah.
So it could have
no,
been.
No, but
that.
I swear he said, like, in one of the episodes, like, oh, I lost my job a couple weeks ago.
Oh, he might have. Like, he might have very well done that.
Taylor yes. doesn't know, you know? And it's just like, why is he still lying to her? Like, he's making it sound like, oh, it happened a couple days ago.
Yeah, because that's what he does. He doesn't know how to not lie. Like, we saw that even, was it, oh, it was, I think it was last season, right? Even when he couldn't not lie about, like, where they came up with the baby's name. Like, we just liked the name Mason.
Right.
He was like, oh, it was my grandfather. Like, just why are you lying about that?
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, when you see things like that, you know, being lies being told to other people, not even to, you know, and you know the truth.
Yeah.
Like, as Taylor, I would be like, this man lies about freaking everything. I would never trust him for anything, like little things. You know, I would just be like, yeah, this person is just like has a tendency to lie about literally everything.
Right. Like they and for seemingly no reason.
Yeah. Like what are you getting out of like lying about what your where your baby name came from? Who cares if you got it off the side of a custom blanket? Who cares?
Yeah, it doesn't matter. Yeah, that's always a red flag to me is when I hear people who are lying for like no gain and no benefit, then I'm like, well, then I know you'll have no compunction, no problem lying when it is to benefit you. Right.
Right.
Which is why she still doesn't believe that this Tanya is a friend.
Right.
Like, I think she definitely has her own jealousy issues and that would be an issue regardless of how he handled it. But he's not helping. Like all the other lies are like, well, what, how do oh, yeah, I lied to you about that. But this, you can trust me, I'm not lying about. Like, why? Why would you do that?
Yeah, I don't get him. I don't really see how he could, like, turn and be a completely different person the day after because he knows that he could lose her. But then the day before, literally behave like he doesn't give a shit if he loses her. Like, I don't understand how you could have a change of heart that quickly and like that drastically. Like one of those two things isn't real, and I would almost say the being nice thing is not real.
I mean, yeah, well, that's the, you know, especially because he said the other thing when he was drunk, and it's like, well, do you make things up when you're drunk? Because I don't know, I don't think people necessarily make things up, but they might say something just because they know that's gonna hurt and that's gonna win me my argument if even if it's not true. So I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. What in the world was spilling out the bed of his truck when he was peeling out of the lot? Did you see that big slush of water? Like it was almost like he had water like completely in the back.
So that can happen when it rains, but there's usually drains in the corner, which means he probably has tried to do some stuff on his truck too. Like there's usually like little holes drilled in the bottom of the bed that the water when it rains runs to, or else because you'd have a bed full of water, right?
Right.
When
right.
it rained. But yeah, if those get clogged or whatever and you don't like clean them out, then you can have like water sitting in the back of your bed, which can swoosh out like that when you pull away. But either clogged or I could totally see him putting in his own bed liner and not putting the holes in the bed liner. I could, any kind of self DIY that you can mess up. I'm like, chances tried that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right. And I could see him doing his own liner and being like, oh, well, here's, I can fill up the truck with water in the summertime and the girls have a pool.
Oh, let's
see him doing that
too.
That
would be, it's really hard to keep the water in the
That's like chance logic right there.
Yeah. That's what I need is I need a bunch of weight in the back of my truck that's just shifting around when I'm turning. That's just a fantastic idea. Yes.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's move on to Cameron and Eris. So Eris is picking up a dessert for their dinner. So she isn't home when Cameron's sisters arrive for their visit. They ask where Eris is and immediately make comments about how Eris is never there. Cameron then explains that the last time Eris actually wasn't feeling well, and that's why she didn't show up to the family party. Steph, one of his sisters, accuses Cameron of starting something because he never told them that Eris wasn't feeling well, and the whole family was ready to write off Eris. Cameron says that it was a mix of Eris being sick and also not wanting to see him drink. Cameron pours Patron shots and tells his sisters that he said he wouldn't get drunk, but that doesn't mean he can't take a shot. Neither of his sisters want to take shots, and they start to lecture him that he has a whole family now, and how would it feel if Lena saw him drunk falling off a table, like at their last family party? Cameron says that they need to respect his transition to the free world. And then they fight over why Steph bought over a bottle of Patron if she didn't support him drinking it immediately. Kia tries to break up the fight, and Cameron gets frustrated as Steph just tells him to chill out as he takes another shot of Patron. They continue to argue about Cameron's alcohol issues. Cameron says he realizes he has a problem, and it's just embarrassing to admit. He tells them how he peed in the closet because he thought it was the bathroom. Cameron tells us that he's actually been taking classes for his alcoholism. Steph says that he's a loose cannon and that he should probably move back home because he needs some adult supervision. Cameron thinks he's done a lot of positive things, but it seems to be overshadowed by his drinking. Cameron says he's fighting it, and it really is a process. Now that they're kind of getting along, Cameron is proud to show them how he built the lanai and shows them some mutated ducks. Later, they all go to a restaurant to meet up with Eris and her dad and Lena. They start off by apologizing to the sisters and blame Cameron for throwing Eris under the bus. In the middle of dinner, Lena says she got the wrong kind of lemonade, and then Cameron starts yelling for the server, and Eris's dad tells him not to behave that way in this kind of place. He says that Cameron is a good guy, but he needs some guidance. After that incident, Cameron makes their pregnancy announcement with his t-shirt, and his sisters are surprised, but eventually they seem happy. They all find out that Lena is the only one who can keep a secret since Eris ended up telling her dad a couple episodes ago. In the end, we find that their baby is due in August. All right. So it seemed like, you know, there were a couple bumps in there. But for the most part, the family seems to be pretty good. They all kind of get along with one another. What did you think of Cameron's behavior? We got him actually coming to terms with that maybe he does have an alcohol problem and then taking, you know, steps in the right direction for it. But then what I can only assume was him maybe being drunk and not realizing that yelling for the server across the restaurant was probably not the classiest thing to do.
Yeah, I mean, I think some of the server stuff is just like, you know, not used being used to being in that kind of establishment. Like, like if he's used to crowded bars, then you kind of have to yell for the bartender, right? Like, to get him. But maybe, I don't know. It was rude. I didn't like it. I hate when people mistreat servers. Like, it's it's terrible. But I mean, besides that, he's one of the most self-aware people we've seen on the show.
Oh, for sure. 100%.
Like, with the alcohol problem, like, he looked at it and was like, yeah, I peed in the closet. That's not a good sign.
A sign. Like, it is a sign.
That's bad. Although I feel like I've never done it personally, but I feel like everybody's known somebody who has, right?
Oh, yeah. I had a roommate and her sister had her 21st birthday or something like that. So her sister was wasted. And in the middle of the night, she opens up my bedroom door and starts to walk towards my closet. I'm like, hello, what are you doing? What's going on? And it ends up that she thought my closet was a bathroom and she almost like squatted and peed. And I just had to like usher her out. I was like, I don't know where you think are, but.
Because part of that has to be some sort of sleepwalking thing, right? Because I could see being so drunk that you went to the wrong room, right? I'm thinking when I've been drunk, but I've been like, where's the toilet, man? What? Because I have to like, you have to sit on something. I have to pick something up. Like, to do it. And I'm like, what? I'm confused. And then I'd figure it out or go back out. But there's like, you know, because I've known people who've done it like as children too, because they literally sleepwalk into the closet and like sit there and like literally like, you can see them do the hand motion like they're picking up the toilet seat lid and then go because they're dreaming that they're picking up a toilet seat lid and they're going right there. And so, yeah, but being so drunk that you do it is, you know, different. But concerning, but it's not something that's like, who's ever heard of that? Like that people have done that.
Right.
But
yeah, sure. And I mean, Chance also in this episode recognized that he had an alcohol problem, but it's like his was way worse than Cameron.
Oh yeah, for sure. Definitely. Like it was, I mean, but I don't know. Cause I feel like Cameron's, you know, even like his self-realization was like, hey, this is getting in the way. This is a problem. Like, I'm going to do that. Whereas I think I felt like Chance was more using it as an excuse. Like, I was a complete mess last night. I guess it's out of my hands and I'm an alcoholic. Right. and like right. using it to, you know, not necessarily pardon his behavior, but be like, well, you know, my alcohol problem got is what it is.
Well, I think also it's a convenient way to really demonstrate that there could be change. Right.
Oh, right. Like, all I have to do is stop drinking.
Yeah. So then you can forgive me and everything's fine, you know. And I mean, and I would admit that one of the things I say is you shouldn't go back if nothing's going to change. So if he can commit to that change, I mean, at least that's demonstrating that like things will be different this next time around.
Right. But I mean, in Cameron and Eris's situation, like that was never really the sticking point. Right.
Right.
They had the one fight when he was like super drunk at the thing. But I did think it was funny when we revisited that like, you know, they kind of said something about it. And he was like, well, you know, she wasn't feeling that well that day. And they're like, why didn't you tell us that? Like, that makes it hugely different. Of course, we would understand if you told us she wasn't feeling well.
Yeah. Definitely. It was funny how he was like, oh, well, you know, I don't know. My sister's like blame me. Eris blames me. And now they're cool with each other. So
somehow it's magically all my fault. It's like, well, yeah, you left out the key part of the story that made everybody fight with each other. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Let's go on to my last people. Our favorite, Derek and Monique. So Derek,
not my favorite.
He's in a hotel room and he calls Monique to meet with her without anyone else to gang up on him. He's like, you got mother, just sisters, keep him away. So she's not sure that she wants to meet, but he sends her an address and is kind of like, well, I'll be waiting here. If you get here, I'll get here. So we get a flashback of the previous night's drama with the phone, and he says he's still dedicated to proposing to her. So he waits for her in one of the entrances to Millennium Park. It's a big park in Chicago. So an hour later, she finally shows up. And is a little standoffish. So he apologizes and just wants a chance to talk. So he wants credit for not leaving her once she kicked him out of the house because, you know, he could have just gone back to Cleveland. Forget it. That shows how committed he is. He actually called her the next day. So he apologizes to talking to other females if that makes her uncomfortable. But I guess only if it makes her uncomfortable. And then asks what he can do to earn some trust back. So she wants to... Her proposal for getting the trust back is, number one, stop sleeping with your phone in your drawers, which is a choice. And he agrees to this, plus says he'll give her his passcodes. So Monique says that he always says he's going to do better, but, you know, kind of wonders why this time is different than any other time. So he keeps it up with the, you know, I'm going to be good to you talk. And then she says that she basically... you know, isn't sure because she came down here to break up with him. But in an interview, she still says that she's confused. She doesn't really want to give up, but she doesn't like the way he's acted. So he has a plan to make it all better. And it's ice skating around the park, which she doesn't want to do because she's wearing a short dress and no. So Derek is going to do it regardless and skates for a while behind. It's like a beginner like tool that you like push around that's a snowman with handles so that you don't fall down. Usually it's kids that use it. But anyway, then he does that for a little while. And then as she walks next to the rink and then gets down on one knee to propose. So after a commercial break, she says yes. And she says that he loves him and is still thinking fondly of the connection they had while he was in jail. So he's still talking up a game and says, look, I learned to ice skate in a few seconds, which he definitely did not learn to ice skate in a few seconds. Right. What he was doing was pushing something around the ice, not ice skating.
Yeah.
So he can also learn to be better to her. So he says from here on out, it's no more tears of pain, just tears of joy. And he tells us in an interview that he's totally committed and is retired from being a player. So Monique and Derek are now in a long distance engagement, and the wedding planning has gone slowly, is what they say in the post credits and the end screen. All right, so my question is, how long before he cheats on her again?
It's happening already. That's what I would say.
This is so dumb.
I don't know. It's like, why? We've been saying this. I feel like we say this every episode, like us. What is he doing? He clearly wants to be with other women. So like, what's he doing? Like committing himself to her? It's not that he can't like... you know, be with other women. You be with other women, but don't pretend like you want to be tied down and committed because you don't.
Yeah, you don't. You don't. And it's like, and there's no, I couldn't help myself. It's like, nope, you made a choice. You made a positive choice. And if you can't help yourself, then you don't want to be committed. Like, yeah. And so,
yeah, there is no way this couple's still together. Do we have any spoilers for them outside of the
show?
Not
that I have seen, but I haven't looked particularly hard. I can't.
Yeah, this couple cannot still be together.
I believe they could be because Monique would put up with literally anything at this point.
Well,
like,
yeah,
the fact that she said
yes, you're right,
is just like there is nothing he can do. There is nothing he can do that would make her say no.
You are right. And that's what's so sad about this. It's like, wow, like I wish that you would have more self-esteem to realize that one, this guy is no prize. Like you could find someone else to love you. But I mean, I guess it's also like depending on, you know, what she's looking for specifically, you know, like we kind of say that about a lot of like seemingly mismatched couples that are making bad decisions because they're just like, this is my last chance at love. It's like, yeah, but why is it your last chance at love?
Right.
Is it because you're looking at this very, very specific like dating pool where finding someone who feels the same way is difficult? Then sure, yes, it might be your last chance at love if you're trying to date someone who's 40 years younger than you from a yes. different country who's poor and is completely dependent on you, which we see a lot like in the beginning days of 90 Day Fiancé. Uh-huh. But, you know, for something like this, if she's looking for a man who, you know, has a certain look to him and, you know, is like someone who I don't really even know what she sees in him, to be honest.
I don't know what she sees in him at all. Like I don't think I've heard very many people talk on this show or in real life that are so transparently full of shit. Like,
yeah.
I don't know how she, you know, I'm going to treat you good. No, I don't. I don't know that at all. Like, how would I know that? You've never given me any indication that you actually would do that. Why would I believe that? It's crazy. It's like he could be literally like FaceTiming her while banging another woman and being like, I swear, baby, I'll never cheat on you again. Like, he was like, what are you doing right now? Like,
right.
And she's kind of like, well, you know, I know his heart. He's like, you know, my heart. He's like, I don't know your heart. Like, it's so infuriating to be like, what is it she's believing and why? Like,
she just wants someone there. But, and that's the thing too. And I feel like it will really come down to when they live in the same area, they live in the same town, live in the same house. That's when she's going to realize like, oh, this guy isn't as fully invested. And it's easy to kind of feel like they're more invested when it's long distance. But when it's like you're waking up every day next to each other and this guy is like maybe doesn't come home like at night or comes back really, really late at night and there's suspicious things going on, that's when it's going to be like in her face and there's no way she could ignore it anymore.
I don't know how it could be more in her face when he slept with his phone in his ass just to keep her from looking at it. Like,
yeah.
You know, like, I mean, it was in his, she said in his drawers. I assume that meant he literally wouldn't put the phone on the bedside table and would put his phone in his underpants while he slept so that she would know if she grabbed it. Right.
Yeah.
And that just, that's a step, man. Like that.
Yeah. Yeah. What a weirdo. All right, Tal, let's move on to our last group, Puppy and Amber. So TC walks in the middle of them all packing up, and Amber sends Puppy and Queen to the closet to get that cleaned out, but really so she can get a moment alone with TC. Amber says that she might have tried talking to TC if she had come back to the house and it wasn't such a mess, instead of making the decision to up and leave. Amber is trying to show him that she's serious. TC is confused, so Amber recaps that they were arguing about the cleanliness of the house. TC got mad, threw it in her face that he wasn't attracted to her, and then brought up the abortion. TC denies that he said that, and Amber accuses him of never admitting what he said. They both angrily agree that they both just need to move on. Amber says that she's either getting her name off the truck or she's taking it. And TC says that she is not taking it and his name is on it, too. They're yelling at each other and we see TC really lose it over who pays what. Amber says that, OK, fine, she'll give him 7 days to get the truck out of her name or she's coming back to get it. Puppy and Queen are just awkwardly listening from the other room. Amber then says that TC doesn't seem to care about her anymore, and she asks him why he didn't just let her go if he didn't care about her instead of having her do everything like take care of the kids and house. TC says he just got over it, and oh well. Amber then says she's been over it too. as she goes to the other room to cry. Puppy tries to comfort her with a hug and offering a cigarette as they are yelling at Queen to get them cigarettes. They all go outside and Amber says that none of these things really bother her. It's really just the baby thing that bothers her as she continues to cry. TC's inside talking to production, saying that he sucks at being a person and he doesn't do well with dealing with emotions. Amber goes back inside to continue talking to TC. TC says that he hears her. TC says that as soon as she told him she was pregnant, he had named the baby and imagined a kid running around. Amber says that she had no choice, and TC says that he doesn't blame her, but he also just doesn't want to talk about it, as he cries and says that he can't deal with it. TC says he didn't know how to help her because he couldn't help himself. Amber goes over to hug him as they both say it was really hard for the both of them. Amber says that they don't have to end things poorly and they can still be friends. TC thinks that you need to keep emotions bottled up because if you let them out, they just keep coming. And Amber is trying to convince him, no, that's not how it works. And if you deal with it, closure can happen. Amber is frustrated that it took so long for him to say these things that she needed to hear the whole time. They agree to be friends as Amber leaves. So in our update, we find out that Amber lives with Puppy and Queen, and Puppy is paying rent by selling her clothes. Yeah. All right. So why do you think TC has this crazy idea that bottling up is like the way to go?
Oh, I actually have a theory for that because he's not wrong. If your emotion that you're talking about is anger, right? Mm-hmm. So they've kind of thrown out that whole idea of like, you know, oh, take your anger out and punch the pillow or whatever. Just get that anger out and it'll stay away. That doesn't happen. Once your anger starts, it just streams, right? And it just gets worse and it builds on itself. And so like in anger management classes, you're never going to hear them be like, oh, just start screaming and it'll go away. Like they will never tell you that, right? Because once you start screaming, and I know you and I have both been there. Once it gets to a certain point and hits scream, it's nonsense. It keeps coming. And that's what it is. And so I feel like for many men specifically, right? And TC is definitely someone who's been socialized with typical American masculine, you know, society. It's the only emotion you're allowed to have is anger. Right. Mm-hmm. And then that one is one that definitely floods and definitely streams out. You have to like actually do something else and channel it somewhere else. If it's bottle it up or whatever, then you do. Now, I think what he has to kind of get a hold of is that he has other emotions and he was also sad about this baby and, you know, disappointed and things and other things besides I'm just so pissed off. I'm going to get and because. That does flood. That is what happens. And I think he spends a lot of time bottling up specifically anger, right? Mm-hmm. At the expense of letting out other emotions that he has.
Yeah, I would say that's a pretty good summarization of what he's doing and a good like working theory on what is actually happening with him because he was like holding back like this hurt. But I do also feel like he was angry about what happened because I feel like he kind of flip-flops on what he says. Like he's saying in this episode that he doesn't blame her, right? When he's like crying. Mm-hmm. But when he was angry in other episodes, like he for sure blamed her.
Yeah.
You know? And so I do think there is a mix of emotions there. Some of anger where he does blame her and then others of more empathy and hurt where he understands where she's coming from because he feels the same way.
Yeah. I mean, and we saw that the anger as soon as she mentioned, I might take the truck. Like,
oh, yeah.
Like he got very, very angry.
Right. Very heated very quickly. And she was very quick to back down and like try to de-escalate. I mean, she wasn't being impractical about anything.
She was just like, I want my name off it. You can keep it. I just want my name off of it.
Right. Yeah. And so he was just like, you are not taking the truck. It was just like, OK, well, let's listen to what she just said. Mm-hmm. There are options for you to keep the truck, you know, but you got to follow through with the other things.
Right. Yeah. I mean, and it very much is a matter of like, yes, when he's angry, I think he gets angry at the situation. He gets angry at what's going on. He's not great at figuring out where to direct the anger. Where to bring it. And that's why when he gets angry, he blames her. And then when he's not flooding, when it's not, you know, that stream of emotions that he's trying to stop from happening, he can be like, actually, I can see that it was really hard for you too, right? And I, yeah. And that's where that comes. But I mean, I think they're both, I mean, I think that they both are good in recognizing that, like, yeah, this is the end of this, right?
Right. Yeah, I was very happy about that, because when Amber went to go back in to talk to CC, like, and even when she kind of, like, she first said it doesn't have to end like this. So I thought she was trying to say, like, oh, it doesn't have to end. I'm like, no, what are you doing?
Right.
And so, yeah, and so... yeah, I was like, it's over. It's pretty obvious it's over, right? How do you even recover from all of this?
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know either. This is – that's – it's all just – it's all just too much to recover from. But, I mean, yeah.
It's not to say it's impossible, but I just don't feel like those two, and specifically TC, really had the tools of communication to really recover from that.
Yeah. I mean
– because she was right. Like, the things that he said, it was like a little too little too late.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, he let some big things out that it's like you can't – those are things that you said that you really can't take back. There's still things that you said, right? And
– yeah.
And I think he recognized that – it recognized the same thing. That's toothpaste you can't put back in the tube, right?
Yeah.
Those things are out. Now, I did think it was interesting that – like, you know, they're trying to calm down. They had the whole point where Queen and she was just like, I need a cigarette and I need a cigarette. And they gave her not just a cigarette, but like a cigarette and a Red Bull. And I was like, I feel like that part, like, I see how cigarettes calm people down, but maybe don't need energy drinks like on top of this.
Oh,
like,
my just, goodness.
Her heart is just going to be going 1,000 beats per minute. Let's settle it down.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. Crazy bunch. Okay. So that was everyone for this season. And it looks like we don't pick up with a new season of New Couples until July.
Yeah. It said we last, the only thing I saw on the commercials was life. No, it was life, love during lockup. That's the next season in July.
Well, that's a hot mess usually. All right. So out of the cast that we saw, we usually do power rankings when the season is over. So let's start off with our number one. So these are mostly based on what they do, but they could be just arbitrary based on how we feel personally.
Yeah, I feel like some people moved up and down this time based on how bored I am with them.
Yeah. Yeah. I actually, when I was developing my list, kind of worked from the bottom up. And so then towards the middle, it was kind of like an interesting area. So I really had to think about justification, but it was kind of like process of elimination got me to number one.
Behind the curtain, I generally do mine. I pick the first couple and then put them in, slot them. Which one do I like better? Mm-hmm. And then from there on, computer science thing, I do an insertion sort.
That's interesting. Okay.
Where do they fit on the list? Okay, here.
Mine was more of a, I guess you would refer to it as a selection sort, starting with
your
maximum.
Yeah, starting with the bottom, for sure.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. So my number one was actually Amber.
Okay.
You know, barring whatever decision she made about abortion, I mean, that's her personal decision. I think that she made very healthy choices for herself and her relationship. She tried to be there for, you know, her friend Puppy. What I think I most admired about her is, you know, there wasn't any of this waffling towards the end of her relationship. When she decided she was done, she was done. And she did it in a respectful way. There was nothing that she did to try to really aggravate him. I mean, there were certainly things that he could probably see as trying to aggravate, like trying to express her emotions and her feelings. Like, he definitely took that as, you're trying to aggravate me. But I don't think it was that. I think it was her really trying to make sense of it all for the both of them.
Yeah, I mean, Amber was close to the top on mine, but, mm-hmm. you know, a couple spaces down. I also just think in the middle part of the season, because the other thing too is we're going to do these and we're going to be like, remember this season when they did this awful thing at the beginning? You're like, oh yeah, I forgot about that part. Yeah. Like, I don't really have one of those instances, but it was, you know, she spends a lot of time just bickering with Puppy a lot when they're trying to help each other. And, you know, this might be one of those instances where somebody just moved down a couple spaces because I'm bored of them and I've seen them before and I know what they think and I know how they feel. Yeah, I don't disagree with anything you said. So my number one was actually Cameron.
Okay. Well, Cameron was my number two.
Yeah.
So
just He's actually super self-aware.
Yes.
He's a little goofy. He's not as goofy as we thought he was going to be, like, when we first met him, like, seasons ago.
Right, right. He's kind of like dad jokes sometimes, but that makes sense. He's trying to entertain a 10-year-old girl.
He's trying to be
girl.
A dad. Like, and so, yeah, there's dad jokes in there. But he he's one of the people that actually seems like he's on a mission to improve himself and taking actionable steps to do so.
Yeah. Yeah. I think he's very real. When he was talking about his alcohol problems, said it was embarrassing. That's why he didn't want to, like, bring it up. Mm-hmm. But I also appreciated that he's not doing any court ordered classes. These are classes that he wants to take to make himself better.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
Yeah. Okay, so who was your number two then?
So my number two was Michael.
Okay.
And this is one of those ones where I struggled to think about what happened this season and what happened other seasons. He moved down because I wasn't a fan of – so between Michael and Cameron, I was like, well, which one made me more upset? Cameron yelling at the waitress, right? Which happened recently. Or Michael buying the ring and then lying that he put the money into crypto.
Oh, gosh. Cameron, I kind of feel like, you know, depending on how he reacted, like, with dad correcting him, mm-hmm. I think he was very receptive of that and didn't, you know, so I kind of think it made it seem like, oh, it really was an honest mistake, you know? And that's what I appreciate about Cameron, too, and that's why I had him so high and over Michael, like, way over Michael, is just that he is willing to admit when he's wrong. And that, I think, is a rare quality in people, let alone the show. Mm-hmm. The show, like, no one's admitting they're wrong ever.
No,
Derek.
No. And I have I suspect when we get to Michael, you're going to remind me of some horrible thing that he did that I forgot about.
No, my middle was actually very... Very just like
whatever they were
like
all there.
Very random reasons.
They were all there. Yeah, like he, yeah. Yeah. I mean, I just think, you know, at the end when he did what he did for what Justine wanted was pretty nice. And you know, I just appreciate the way he does seem to be about his family.
Yeah. Yeah. For sure. All right. Who is your number three?
Number three is where I put Amber.
Okay.
So you know, like I said, I think at the end of the day, it just is like. Move them down below because I'm bored of seeing this. I'm bored of seeing this. She's been on the show a lot.
I put Puppy as number three. Like, I think that she does try to be a good friend. I think where Puppy is frustrating to me is why she was so freaking loyal and tied to Eric, you know?
Right. And it's just like. That's the reason I have Puppy lower is like, I don't understand. Like, there's a few people in here I have down low for your commitment to a terrible partner.
Okay. Yes, you're right. Same. Like, it's like further down because it's like you're making terrible life choices like for yourself. So I'm going to put you further down. But yeah, I put Puppy as number three because she's trying. I think it's just, you know, I guess it's hard for everyone. But, you know, she at least has seeked out the support that she needs to make the good decisions. So, yeah. Okay. What about four?
Four, I went with Eris.
Okay.
Just because I couldn't think of any reason not to. Like, she's fine. Right. I don't think she did anything wrong. She's definitely less entertaining to hear talk than Cameron and everybody else.
Yeah,
but,
yeah, I agree.
You know, they seem to be putting a decent life together. I mean, so good for them.
Yeah, for sure. I went Taylor, number four.
Okay.
You know, for the most part, Taylor, I think Chance does not give her enough credit for... You know, being a mostly reasonable person, you know, even when he broke it to her that he lost his job, she did not freak out on him. She did not blow up at him. She's like, well, why didn't you tell me before? That was literally her only reaction to it. You know, like, why didn't you tell me before? Why did you lie to me? You know, why did you hide this from me? You know, and I think it was she didn't lose her cool or anything like that. So I just feel like Taylor really didn't do anything wrong other than picking a really terrible partner.
Yeah. And that's more or less what moved her down for me. And so when we get I have a couple other things to say, but we'll wait till we get till I get to her then.
Yeah. So my number five was actually Eris because I know you're. Four was Eris. Mm-hmm. Five is Eris. I put her a little bit further down just because I just feel like, to me, she's just not as likable as these other people. There's nothing she did wrong. Yeah, I mean, I can't think of a single thing that she did wrong. But I mean, for me, the middle section, no one really did anything terribly wrong. Yeah. It was just more so like, would I want to hang out with this person? Or, you know, are they, or is this person being extremely mistreated by their partner? Mm-hmm. And I appreciate their reactions. You know, Eris is dealing with Cameron. Like, for the most part, you're right. There are a couple little hiccups here and there, but hadn't had major drama between the two of them.
For sure. Yeah. 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 So five is where I had, five is where I put Brittany.
Especially
if we're taking the season at face value. If you take this whole season was a fraud and they've been separated this whole time, then maybe she goes a little bit lower. But if we take as what they have as face value, again, that's, she's in that middle part of, did she do anything wrong? Did she do anything great?
Right.
Yeah. But I'm also bored of seeing her and seeing the same story again.
Yeah, yeah. So that was your number five?
That was my number five.
Okay, so how about your six?
So my six was Justine.
Okay.
And she just fell lower because, honestly, because of a stupid house thing last time. The $1.9 million
house.
That's
so funny. That's why I had Justine lower too. I mean, Justine's even lower for me.
Yeah, I was like, this is dumb. But it was also just like one thing and not like a repeated thing. And that's why it took her down, but not... not so far down. It was just, it was that dumb. It was really, really dumb.
Right. So Michael was my number six. I just, you know, there wasn't anything terribly wrong other than, you know, what was the point of that whole Vegas thing? Proposing to her, proposing to her in that way. Mm-hmm. It just didn't make any sense. Like, I don't know. I just feel like... and him trying to juggle both Mocha and Justine. It was just like, I just didn't understand. I feel like it could have been played out so much better.
Yeah, that makes sense.
But once again, I don't think he did anything wrong. My number seven was Brittany.
Okay.
Just because, once again, it's like nothing wrong with anything that she did this season. I would say I'm just tired of seeing her. That's like why she's kind of in the middle.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
And so my seven was Puppy.
Mm-hmm.
For kind of the same reasons, I put her lower down. She really lost a lot of points for like, why did you stay with Eric for so long?
Yeah.
Like, why did you put up with this for so long until it was thing? It was, even if after it was obvious he had gotten back with his ex-wife or whatever. And she's the first of my people that are, you're a low because you put up with a partner that you knew was bad.
Right. So my number eight was Justine. So I think our first halves are about the
pretty
same.
Close.
I put Justine at number eight because of the budget thing. And then also just, the stuff where at the beginning of the season, I want to say that they were fighting about with her mom. Wasn't she fighting with her mom over something?
Oh,
the baby stuff.
Did they announce, like, did they tell the pregnancy mom that they were pregnant this season?
I want to say they did.
Yeah, that was a little bit of a shit show, right?
Yeah, yeah. And just her stubbornness about, like,
oh,
you should wear the ring. And
yeah, well, was that, wait, was it this season? Because remember they told his mom, she was like, I want a paternity test.
Oh, like, gosh, yes.
Right? So that was even messier, which...
Right. I think that was all this season. I don't think they were pregnant at the end of last season.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So we're number eight. You just did your number eight?
Yes, eight.
Mm-hmm. All right. So my number eight was Lindsay.
Okay.
Because we're in that same road as, if you look at the totality of what she did, she wasn't necessarily wrong. She's trying to put together this household. She's trying to do what she can. She's, you know, reaching out in frustration and doing some dumb, well, I don't care if you take the car, I'm getting you arrested. She was not wrong for most of the things she was mad about, but she was kind of annoying about the way she yelled at him.
Well, I put her a little bit further down because, I mean, she was really mean verbally to her partner.
Yeah, I guess so. But I guess
more so than we saw many of these. And I mean, and I don't think it was because she loved him any less. You know, I think it was just, she's just one of those fiery people that says a lot of messed up shit when she's mad.
Yeah. I mean, but I don't think, I don't remember her saying anything, you know, it wasn't as bad as TC being like, well, I think you were discovered the baby on purpose. You're
right.
Unattractive.
Yeah, that was pretty bad.
It was usually like, you're an idiot for doing this. Like, you know, that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Well, I had her a little bit lower down. Mm-hmm. So was that your number 8?
That was my number 8.
Okay. So who was your number 9?
My number 9 was Sean. So.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Well, he acted like a big baby, right?
Yeah.
But he was kind of on the – he was finally on the other end of the person being lied to, right?
Uh-huh.
Right? And he kind of figured it out and kind of knew it. And it's mostly because – I mean, in this case, he was finally the – and maybe it's a little bit higher than he should be just because it's credit for being like, oh, in the partner rankings, you actually beat your partner this time. She was worse to you than you were to her.
No, I disagree. My number 9 was Sarah.
Uh-huh. Okay.
I think the only thing Sarah did in this season was lied to him about, you know, Anthony. And it wasn't – the lie was stupid. I mean, it was all around stupid because it didn't mean anything. It really – made Sean think it meant something just because it was a secret. But the reality is that I understand why she started off. I'm not going to make a big deal about something that isn't going to turn into anything. And then she just didn't know how to tell him the truth after that. I really feel like that was the only thing that she did wrong this season. I mean, we also have to remember how the season started off. Sean being a deadbeat dad, coming home, eating cookies and dropping chunks on the floor, walking away, not even picking them up, and then completely ignoring his child.
Right, but then we turned around and she didn't ignore the child, but like, I don't know, because it definite was like, I agree, that was really the only thing she did wrong. But it was also like 90% of her storyline was the thing she did wrong, right? And so I feel like we focused so much on that it was like, well, yeah, the only thing we talked about all season long was how you were wrong. And we definitely had like that. I think it was kind of clever the way they did it. The, you know, she had the sex swing and he had the hot tub, and both of them got a chance where it was like, hey, look, I did this special thing to spice things up. And the other one was like, I'm tired.
Yeah. Well, Sarah was my number 9.
All right. So
what about your number 10?
My number 10, that's where I put Taylor. And okay. I think much of that comes from that standard I had this time of, you're getting lower for putting up with someone who's obviously a piece of shit, right?
Yeah.
So moves her down for that. But also, she is good at handling many things, right? You said, like, the lost job. She is not good at handling a woman's name on your phone.
Oh, no. Oh, yeah, that's true. I completely forgot she burned stuff.
Yes. She had the burn stuff. She thought he was with Tanya. And the way she – look, Chance was awful at the bar, right?
Oh, yeah.
But she didn't really de-escalate that. Like, she didn't handle that in the best way she could. And when they were there, she was worried about – she was very concerned about, like, the less important stuff. Like, it wasn't like, wow, my fiance is a drunk mess who's trying to drive off in his truck and, like, doing all that. And she was just like, I don't like the way that – she keeps touching him. Like, that was what she was focused on, was that this other woman was touching his shoulder trying to calm him down.
Like, right, right.
And so that moved her – those two things moved her down for me.
Yeah, I forgot about the burning thing. I probably wouldn't have put her as high for that. Number 10, I went with Blaine.
Okay.
Yeah, he is frustrating, lazy, you know. But I think the reason why he was more in the middle is I kind of stuck him and Sarah next to each other because – what did they do this season but lie?
Right.
Right? Over insignificant things that really got them in more trouble than if they just had been honest in the first place.
Yeah. I mean, I have Blaine at number 11. So right in the same area for that same reason. Like, it's just like, especially his was, they literally had a conversation about, all right, whatever it is, just don't keep anything from me and don't lie and we'll be okay. And he's like, great, I agree. And 2 seconds later, he's like, well, I'm not going to tell her about this. It's like, what?
Yeah, I'm just going to make these decisions. And I thought it was ridiculous that he's saying, like, well, she needs to not make, like, rash decisions. You know, it's like, hello, didn't you just take the deal without discussing it with her?
Right. And now you're going to take another deal, which I was very confused, if we're going to jump back, about how his deal, about how in the span of like a month, we went from, oh, yeah, you're going to be in jail for 19 years for this, to, oh, yeah, your ankle monitor's coming off at the end of the month. We're good. Like, how do
Right. Well, I think he paid all his fines and restitutions. The lawyer didn't say that specifically. So I thought he was just like using it as like, hey, here's part of my argument for why we're in this financial mess, because I paid all these things and you said I should have like just paid it like in part. I think he was trying to like make it see like, see, I'm the smart one. I'm, you know, I did all this stuff and now this is like, but I don't know. Maybe there is some validity to that.
Yeah. I mean, it probably is, but that. There's lots of things that are incurred, right? Anytime you have any kind of bills, if you don't have enough money to pay them all, you have to prioritize some. And if somebody goes off and be like, well, I paid off my entire restitution, it's like, great, now we can't pay the electric bill. Then that maybe that wasn't the best idea, best decision.
Yeah. Okay, so my number 11 was Lindsay. Really, for me, it was just Lindsay, like the things that she said to Blaine, like just her reactions sometimes. For the most part, she was way better in this season than she has been in other seasons. Mm-hmm. Like, I actually believe that she has genuine love for Blaine. I think, like, she really has best interests at heart, but her random freakouts were kind of scary to me sometimes, like her just punching the garage for no reason and, you know, stuff like that. Like, she is fiery and it's kind of scary when she gets explosive like that.
Yeah, I can see that. So it was your 11?
Yes.
All right. So now we're down to the last one. So 12 is where I put Sarah.
Okay.
We kind of talked about it. I just thought the lie for something she knows, like, I don't know. I don't think I quite buy, well, I didn't think it was going to last. I would 100% tell my partner if, like, I was meeting with a, you know, somebody I had a lot of history with that may be around. Mm-hmm. Look, we're going to meet. That feels like something you should tell, even if you think it's only going to be one time, right?
Right.
That should be something you discuss with your partner. And granted, now, if he would have fought it and been like, well, I don't want you to do that, you'd be like, well, tough shit, I'm doing it, right? Because it is the father of her child, right? But yeah, I think she made this whole situation worse. And then, you know, and then that was a whole lie the whole time. That was basically for that lie.
Yeah. I think my number 12 is Sean. Mm-hmm. Petty, everything about him. And it was like, if it was just one thing, I think it would have put him a little bit higher. But it was like this entire season. You start off being the deadbeat dad. Then you get out of that phase. You actually seem to be like changing. But now you're like reacting very poorly and very immaturely to everything. And it was just so annoying. So Sean, same idiot, different season.
Yeah.
Number 12. Yeah.
All right, so I think that leaves us with the same bottom four.
Okay.
Well, we'll get the order. So my number 13, I went with Marcelino.
I did too.
Obviously, mostly for what happened after, right?
It's like, yeah, well, off screen.
You talk
because
all this big game, right. I need to change, I need to listen to my wife.
Yep.
And then the next time we hear you talk was like, I've been selfish and too long. I guess things are done.
Yeah.
It's dumb. why were we even here?
He never even admitted on camera what he was selfish for. Brittany was the one who told us.
Yes. Well, he never did it at any point, right? He never said, before he came to Florida or whatever, he never admits on camera. Well, it was like, I was talking to other women. I cheated on her. None of that. It's just like, we all make mistakes. Like,
yeah. Very vague. Yep. That was number 13. Okay. What about number 14?
14 was Monique.
I did too. For dealing with this idiot. Yep. Like, what is wrong with you? Like, your whole family is saying you should not be with him for very good reasons. And you go in there. Okay, this is what's so ridiculous to me. She went into that conversation with the mindset, I'm going to break up with this guy.
And then she got engaged to him.
Now that he proposes to her, she's like, oh, wait a second. I'm going to do the opposite and spend the rest of my life with him. What is wrong with you?
Yeah, it's just and you said it last week. At this point, she has to accept that she's in an open relationship. Like,
yeah,
because you are. You know exactly. This guy has shown you exactly who he is. And you can't be mad at it, because after you knew all that is when you said, okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Idiocy.
Yep.
All right. Let's see here. Who is your number 15?
So with my 15, I put them right next to each other. I went with Derek.
I did too. Okay, so we really did have the last bottom four.
Yep.
Yeah, I put Derek. It's like, for the most part, this season, we can only suspect that he cheated.
Well, we know he had, I mean, he had entertainment fun on his phone.
Right. Yeah, I mean, we already know his phone was basically Pornhub, as he described it.
But it wasn't, though, because if you go on Pornhub, you don't know any of those people. And those are just that's just up there for everybody to see. This was not the same thing.
Right. So, I mean, like, he had some shady behavior that just leads you to believe that, yes, he's up to his same old tricks. And then why, if you're doing all of this shenanigans, are you like, oh, the answer to this problem is to propose?
That's always been like his end game of doing it, too. Like, I don't know. But it was all, but his answer was always also that, let's get you away from everybody who's going to give you good advice, and then we'll propose.
Right. Yeah. All right. So leaves number 16 obvious, dumbass of the season, Chance.
Yeah, Chance.
I mean, there's so many things other than, you know, what just happened this episode and the episode before. But like the biggest ones is, okay, you're going to lie to your wife to stay out. Your partner, mm-hmm. your baby mama, really, to stay out of the house all day when she could use your help taking care of your infant son. Then you're getting drunk all the time. You're gambling away the money, hiding significant credit card debt. It's like, oh, my gosh, how could you do any more stupid things?
And let's not forget, his plan to get out of all of this was buying a $400 pressure washer. Like,
oh,
that's going to be,
I know, right?
That's going to be the key to my financial freedom. Yeah. Like, oh, man.
His get rich quick schemes are just idiotic. It's just like, oh, my God, you literally have a baby to provide for and you're deciding, oh, power washing.
Yeah.
Let's spend more money. You got to spend money to make money. Well, it's like, not if you're doing it right.
Well, he's just got the like attitude of, I saw like an internet video yesterday of some guy being like, oh, you're all afraid to hustle. You can sell this water. You sell 10 cases of water a day and you'll make blah, 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 blah. And I was like, slow down. Who's selling 10 cases of water a day?
Like, where, to who and where?
Where are you doing this? How are you doing it? Do you have a permit to do that? Where are you getting the foot traffic to sell 120 waters every single day to make, you know, this much money? But that Chance is not like that. Chance is just like, oh, yeah, 10 cases of water, that's no problem. I got that. Everybody can – I could do that. Like, no, you can't. Like, how many driveways are you going to pressure wash? Like,
right.
And then believing like the weird stuff. I thought I did gamble this time because I thought I had to work out. How does it not work out for people who are down on their luck like me? And I was like, that's, oh my God.
I had a good feeling. That's why I started gambling. It's like, never trust your feelings, Chance. You're an idiot.
And at the end of the day, Taylor's right. At the end of the day, he is a drain on that household.
He is, and we've been saying that since, I don't know, the third or fourth episode. So, yeah, Chance, number 16.
Yeah.
All right. Do you have a life lesson for this group?
Yeah, it's basically for many of the people with terrible partners. And it's like when someone has repeatedly violated your trust, words aren't enough. Like, they have to do more than just talk to you and say, well, you know. That was the most infuriating thing to me is the number of people who say, well, you know I care. I was like, do I? Because you haven't shown me that you do at all.
Yeah. Yeah. My life lesson is you don't actually need to be friends with someone you break up with in the sense that you still communicate with them and actively care about how they're doing to end on good terms. Right. And so I feel like, you know, when Amber is trying to end things on good terms, she's like, oh, we can be friends. And I mean, that's all good and fine to say. But I mean, you can end on good terms and still not be friends.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. The friends thing is something that everybody always says, but yeah, you don't, you can be like, that was nice. We had a good run. It's over now.
And yeah, if I see you randomly out and about, I can say hi, maybe make a little bit of small talk.
Yeah,
if I'm there with someone, you can get an introduction. Fine.
Oh, we'll make plans to meet up. Like, you don't have to do that. That's what friends do.
No. Right. Okay, so we may not be back for a while. I know we usually do something in the meantime, but we kind of have busy stuff going on between now and July. So we'll probably just be back when the next season of something from this Love After Lockup franchise come back, either Love During Lockup, Life After Lockup, Love After Lockup.
Yeah, those, I think those are the only three they have so far. We'll see.
Yeah, so we're saying July. So that's where we'll be at.
Yep, we will talk to everybody then.
Okay, until then. Okay. We'll see you soon.
All right, bye.